But marriage will not change your happiness level. We think that the singles are the loneliest people because they don't have people. They don't have that one singular person to go home to and share their life with. It's not to do with your single status. It's not you being single that makes you feel that way. It's the way people treat you for being single. It's the way they consider you or don't consider you. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Single Girl's Guide to Life. Before I jump right in, it would be great if you've listened to this podcast before, if you could give the show a rating. Do me a favour, pause and give it a rating if it's safe to do so and you're not currently driving a car. And if this is your first time listening, then if you could think about giving it a rating at the end, that would be most appreciated. But let's get on with today's topic, and we are going to be exploring the idea around loneliness in your single life and the relationship with mental health and taking care of yourself. But we're also going to be taking a little look at debunking some of the myths around loneliness in single life and how that really affects us. It's very easy for us to feel judged about being single, that people look at a single person and think, isn't your life just so lonely? Like, how could you possibly be happy being single? Because you don't have anyone to share your day with. You're spending time on your own. If you happen to live alone, you spend more time on your own than probably anybody else. And goodness, what if you work from home as well? And I've felt that experience before. But to me, and I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but loneliness is not just about the presence of other people. I can feel lonely when I was in a relationship. You could have felt lonely in a relationship. So many people reach out and say, I want to join the Single Girls Club, but I'm in a relationship. And I'm like, well, why? And they're like, because I want to make friends. I still don't feel like I've got that sense of community. I want to make new friends. That's still what I want to do. I love what your aim is with the Single Girls Club. I just don't happen to be single. And this tells us that loneliness is not purely about the presence of other people. Loneliness runs a lot deeper. And as I've mentioned before, the book Lost Connections by Johan Hari, which I would highly recommend people read, really goes into this. It looks at other causes and solutions for treating anxiety and depression in people without using medication. And whilst it's not a book about loneliness, it very much talks about the fact that some of the solutions to overcoming anxiety and depression aside from medication is looking at social prescriptions and the way that we interact with the world, the way that we connect to the world around us, which is one of the reasons why the Single Girls Club and all the work I do under Chantel the Coach has connection at the core of it. It looks at the idea of friendship, of being connected to yourself and to others. Now, statistically speaking, we know that loneliness can increase the likelihood of mental health, or mental health could increase the idea of loneliness. There's some sort of link to them, and I haven't done the depth of research into looking at that. With single life, it seems that we might get treated in a different way. And there is this narrative that goes on that says you will be happy once you're in a relationship. When I was just out of my divorce, or, you know, in the separation phase, there were people very much encouraging me to date again. And I believe that's because they wanted me to be happy again, that I would be happy if I was dating and if I was with someone. However, when you're first out of a relationship, and I mean a significant relationship, for the majority of us, jumping straight back into a relationship is not going to be the right thing for us to do. It's going to be something that we need to take a little bit of time off to look after ourselves, to reevaluate. For me, it was the first time I was single as an adult. There was no way that I needed to be jumping into that. And ultimately, when I did then jump into it way too early, I learned a lot about myself from the experience. So it was useful in that sense, but I certainly wouldn't encourage the belief that getting myself back into a relationship was going to save me, make me better, or make me happier again. In fact, when people suggested that I was happier when I was in a relationship, or that I was better in some way, I was like, because you've only ever known me be in that state. And that's not okay. That's not the right way that we need to be. But you could go, but I've heard people say it. I've heard scientists or psychologists talk about this, sociologists. People are saying that this is true, that marriage makes people happier. Now, the thing with any kind of research is that headlines are always taken. It's a little bit like the same headlines you get about celebrity gossip. They're there to entice you in. And sometimes, being a mathematician, I'm very aware of this, we can sometimes present data in a particular way that makes things look the way they are. But when you actually do the rigorous research on it, that's not the case. Now, I am not the person that realized some of these statements were false or not as strongly presented and backed up as they sort of claimed to be in some way. It was when I was reading Singled Out by Bella DiPaolo. If you've not heard of Bella DiPaolo, I mean, I don't think there's anybody else really out there doing as much work on single life as Bella DiPaolo. It would be the first name that I come up with in terms of someone that's doing the scientific in-depth research and understands that to enough of a degree. And she writes books, she writes plenty of articles on other psychology websites that bring it all together in some way. And I'm surprised even by myself that I haven't spoken about her as much as I would like to have done. But when I was researching the episode for this, I went straight to this book and thought, is there anything on it? And I went to chapter 2, which was Science and the Single Person. And she starts off by saying, everyone seems to think and goes with the narrative that married life is going to make you happier. Now, I had seen different articles from different people, such as single unmarried women, like they'd never been married, are the happiest subsection of the population that we have. I've seen that. I know where that comes from. However, there was some misinterpretation of the data to get that statement. So then you're like, oh, okay, so maybe they're not then. But I'd also read as well that maybe marriage overall did seem to make people happier. But when I looked at it, it was a lot more beneficial for men than it was for women. Marriage benefited men, whether the relationship was good or not, because of the benefits of having someone keep you accountable, of going, no, you need to go to the doctor, don't just leave that. You know, having that person there for that. And men kind of benefited more from having a wife, if we're assuming a heterosexual couples, as it would have been when the studies were done. But in turn, women only benefited if it were a good relationship. Even then, there wasn't a significant difference to my understanding from being single versus being in a relationship. But if it was a bad marriage, it would be bad for them and they would suffer and it would lead to it being a negative. What's really interesting to me is the way that Bella DiPaolo presented this. And she talks about made-up study, a study that doesn't exist. And she comes up with this drug that's called Shamsta. And she talks you through this study, which I'd like to share with you. She talks about this study and says, people are going to take this experimental drug called Shamsta, and it is meant to make your life wonderful. Like, it's going to be great. So people sign up for it. And when they sign up, they're allocated to four groups in the end based on what happens to them. So the first group is the drug group. They are the people that sign up to take Shamsta. They take it, and they continue to take it throughout the experiment. The next group, however, are people that signed up, but they're unable to have it. It's not possible for them to get, and they are the no drug group. You've then got a third group of people that started to take the drug, but during the experiment, they had to come off it because they weren't enjoying it. It wasn't affecting them in the way they thought, and maybe it was having negative effects. So that's called the no drug intolerable group. And finally, there was a fourth group that had started to take the drug, but at some point during the experiment, they weren't able to take the drug anymore. Maybe prescriptions had run out in the area or the doctor had taken things away. This is what the imaginary study says. And they were called the no drug withdrawn group. They were taken out of the experiment because they didn't finish it off. And she gives you the numbers on that. The people with the drug group were 3.3 on a scale of 1 to 4 of happy, compared to the no drug group, who were 3.2. So not significantly less happy, but, you know, a little bit in terms of numbers. The no drug intolerable group, the group that had given it up because of adverse effects, was 2.9. And then again, the no drug withdrawn group, because they could no longer get it, were at 2.9. So if you were looking at that as a study, you'd go, aha, if you wanted to be selling this drug, you'd be like, look, it makes people happier. Based on the no drug versus taking the drug, 0.1 increase, happier. And if you don't know the numbers, you can make that statement, happier when taking the drug. You've then got the increase based on the other two, the people that chose not to take it because it was making their life unhappier, it didn't work the way they thought, maybe it had no effect at all, or the people that had it taken away. Now that study is made up. It's not true. However, it did come from a study that looked at 2,200 people and their happiness. And whilst those claims weren't made in terms of the different groups, and I'll tell you what those labels are in a second, meant that they were happier because the numbers just aren't significantly different enough and they weren't so quick to make those assumptions. This is the kind of thing that can happen if we're not careful. So really, the group that was allocated drug group was actually the currently married group reporting their happiness level, which came out at 3.3. The no drug group is the group that have never been married, that have been perpetually single, and they reported happiness at a level of 3.2. The no drug intolerable group, they were the group that got married but were divorced. So they had experienced marriage, didn't like it, and left. And they were at happiness of 2.9. And the same went for those that were widowed. They'd had the opportunity taken away from them through no choice of their own, but they could no longer be married according to that statement of marriage. And that was 2.9. Now, some people, for example, my mum still wears a ring despite being widowed. She would deem herself still married, even though he was taken away from her. And we have to be really careful about what we hear. Maybe it's the case that it isn't marriage that makes us happier. What is it that makes us happier? Now, Bella Paola goes on to study and justify other ways of looking at happiness within single people. And I think this is important to understand. One of the ones that she does is when she looks at data that she collected with a colleague and looks at the happiness level of people both before they end up married and after. And in the 5 years before point of someone getting married, so if at the zero point is if they do marry, pretty much everyone is about as happy as one another on average. Now, individual differences always have to be accounted for, but nearly everybody is at about a 7, just a little bit less and just a little bit more. And we can see now if those people were married, stayed single, or got divorced in some way. But at the time, they were just reporting their happiness, and that was about a 7. At the point of marriage, for those that got married and stayed married after that, they had a little increase of happiness as they got married. But then, after each year subsequent, it trailed back down. I mean, when I say it went up, I mean, it's looking about 7.5. It's not a very accurate chart I can see here, but it's definitely not closer to 8 than it is 7. So it went up maybe to 7.5. They'd been about maybe 7.1, 7.2 looking at this. And then after that, it dropped back down to the same level of happiness gradually and slowly between about 7.5 down to 7.2. So realistically, we're splitting hairs on the happiness level of these people. But it went back to normal after about 5 or 6 years. Then we look at singles. So singles come out at being dead on 7 before ideas of round when marriage could have happened, because they obviously don't have a singular point at which that happens. For those that were divorced, they started at 6.9. So we're talking about very close numbers here. And over time, those that are married and then get divorced, over time, do unfortunately experience happiness going down, obviously, after the zero point, the year of people that married. Those people got unhappier after they were married, and over time, eventually, at some point, they did get divorced. So, and that makes sense, right? The people that were experiencing a negative experience got themselves out because they were unhappier. And for years after their marriage, it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. Maybe the relationship was the wrong one. They were getting unhappier and unhappier and unhappier. This study is looking at when they got married and not after that and their divorce, but they're looking at the point they got married, their happiness was kind of the same, but after that, it decreased. Marriage was not for them. Now, that doesn't mean that the divorce was what caused their unhappiness. If we look at that, the trigger point, the change, is the marriage. A marriage isn't for everybody. So it's definitely understanding that for some of us, being single is going to be the right thing. And getting married for some people is going to be the right thing. But marriage will not change your happiness level. The people that were happiest overall were those that were married, but they were happier to begin with. These people were tracked before we knew their marital status. So they were at 7.2 versus those that as a group were divorced at that point in time. They weren't married, who started at 6.9. So maybe there was something different about those people initially. Maybe their upbringing made them unhappier prior to that. And maybe, therefore, the stories they were telling on dates and the way that they were acting in life was making the chances of dating reduced. And maybe they were then letting that perpetually affect them. And maybe they got themselves into relationships that weren't right for them that led to then getting divorced. I am one of the people that has got divorced quite early in my life. Now, it's interesting to think about and reflect on my own happiness. If you've heard me on this podcast before, you'll know that I don't really describe my life as happy or unhappy when I was in my marriage. I describe it as an indifference. I was not as attuned to my inner feelings as I really should have been. Should have being an interesting word, but could have been in my 20s. Whose responsibility was that? In some respects, I think it is a parenting thing. And I think we're becoming more and more aware of that from what I'm seeing on TikTok, you know, the idea of conscious parenting. I don't hold my parents to account for that or blame them. I don't think there were a lot of or a particular representative group of people doing that any better back in the 90s and the early noughties. I I always deem that my parents were doing the best that they thought they were. I can't necessarily agree with all of the choices they made. And I can look back and go, oh, I mean, that could have been better and different, but that's the way it was. In this world, we're not always necessarily encouraged to feel and experience. Now, ever since I started journaling, that has changed my life because I've purposefully asked questions why. I've tried to understand why I feel the way that I do. So if you ask me if I was happier before my marriage, if I was happier during, I don't think happiness is the word that I would actually use at all. To me, I wasn't connected to other people enough and I needed to start over. The marriage actually wasn't the biggest thing. It was just a part of it and it contributed to the feeling of entrapment, if you want to use that word, because I felt trapped by the scenario, not by my ex. My ex made no threat of trying to keep me in the relationship for the sake of it. Nothing on the lines of abuse or anything like that. It was to do with living a life that wasn't the one for me and going through that tick box of moving through school, settling down, moving into a family and so on. But I hadn't experienced enough of life to know that. And there were some practicalities. I did feel further away from friends and I now am very much in a location that very much suits me. So there were some practical elements too. Like to go and see my friends was a 40-minute drive if I had to get to Chelmsford Way from where I was. And I found that annoying. Even Brentwood was still a stretch and it didn't allow me to really form the friendships that I wanted and that I had. And that was really what was coming to the start. But I felt I needed to start over and restart. So it wasn't the marriage per se. And I think this is the thing I'm trying to get at. Our feelings of loneliness and the experiences we have whilst being single or in a relationship are not necessarily because of either of those statuses. That it's not being single itself that makes you feel unhappy or lonely or causes you a reduction in your mental health. It's some of the things that go alongside that. I've read further on Bella DiPaolo's research. And in fact, there was another article published in 2015 that Bella DiPaolo references in another one of her articles, where they were looking at the data from the National Survey of Families and Households alongside data from the General Social Survey. Now, she talks about the fact that they look at who's married, single, or previously married. And then they also put them into these other groups in terms of their levels of socialization. And by that, I mean how often they socialize with their family, their friends, their neighbors, how often they get help from those people. They looked at how connected to other people all of these categories of peoples were. They looked at different genders, they looked at different relationship statuses and compared these different categories that they'd come up with. And they found, as Bella DiPaolo says in the article, that in all 40 comparisons, the people who had always been single were the most connected. Just let that sink in for a second. We think that the singles are the loneliest people because they don't have people. They don't have that one singular person to go home to and share their life with. But the single people were the most connected to other people socially. It also found that those who were previously married and no longer married anymore were more connected than the married couples. Because what happens when you get into a relationship? You suddenly focus only on this one person and you forget about the other connections. I am guilty of that. I didn't forget entirely about my friends, but I actually didn't know what it was like to have friends or to maintain a friendship. That's a better phrasing. I didn't know how to maintain friendships. I moved from primary school to junior school to secondary school. And from that period of time, I maintained no friendships really at all. No, I didn't. I don't talk to any of the people that I went to junior school with, primary school with. It's not a thing. Now, as a child, you can't be expected to do that. But I never learned the skills of it. And so even through uni, I don't speak to anyone from uni, realistically. I would happily talk to them. I'd happily talk to anybody that I've ever met. But I have failed to maintain those friendships from there. And some friendships are meant to leave us. And we do have to phase through and we have to look at why we'll be friends. Situationally, were we friends? Yes, we were. Is there a true friendship underneath? And to get that really true sense of friendship, it is special. It is unique. It's not going to happen with everyone. It's few and far between, as much as it is in a dating or relationship sense. Therefore, single people have more connections to other people. I would anticipate that loneliness isn't the cause of that. I think that said, there's always going to be single people that aren't as connected as they would like to be. And it's that bit that might be causing us the feeling of loneliness. It's that that might be making us feel that we don't belong, that we don't have people to rely on. Now, the thing that creeps in with us is that when we're single, We feel like we don't matter to other people. That's where this idea around having that one person that would put us at the top, that makes us number one, comes from. It's the belief that that means that we matter. Now, regardless of if you have a single person in your life, whether that's a friend, a family member, or a relationship, your life matters so long as you make it matter. Through the things that you do each and every day, from the way you behave and treat other people. I always believe that we should be acting towards one another with kindness. Now, it's really difficult to manage that when you're trying to set boundaries. You feel like the most awful person in the world when you're setting a boundary and having to be a little bit tough with someone about that. For anyone that's a nice person, that is a kind person and that does things positively, shifting towards setting boundaries is the most incredibly challenging thing because it feels so unintuitive for you as someone that is nice, that likes to be friendly and likes to be accommodating. But sometimes that friendliness can get taken too far. But in other circumstances, I believe we should be as friendly as possible within the means that we have to do that. I am a smiley person. I will always greet people with a smile unless I'm completely focused on something else. If you see my mind elsewhere, it probably looks like a resting bee face. If I'm into something, you aren't getting my attention, particularly if I'm really thinking about it, and it will just look like a moody face. But if I happen to see someone, and it doesn't matter if I know them, if I'm opening a door for someone, I will say thank you. I will smile at people. That's who I am. Now, you might go, of course, yeah, that's obvious. I can tell you now, people don't do that because I smile at lots of people and they don't always smile back. Some people think I've smiled at them because I know them. No, I don't know them. I just smile at people. Why would I not smile at people? It's a friendly thing to do. Now, to me, when I go out and about, me being friendly to other people is me representing the way that I want to be in the world. I realize that sometimes some people just need a smile in the day. Some people just need to be heard. Some people just want a bit of a conversation. So if someone, a cashier or someone in a pub, starts talking to me, makes a comment, even a comment that maybe I'm not comfortable with, and I am referring to an experience I had recently, I will still talk to them and I'm not going to blast them for an inappropriate comment that's maybe not as PC as it could be right now. I'm a PSHE teacher though. I can deal with these scenarios because they come up in classrooms. I'm not going to superbly challenge someone out in public, but I will be intrigued as to where they've got their opinion from and what they think and just interact with people. That to me gives my life a sense of purpose even without being particularly proactive about connection, or it doesn't come back to anything about my relationship status. Do I live my life in a way that is aligned with me? Yes. What does that mean? It means being polite and friendly and being curious about conversations people ask. To me, it's about being positive and seeing the good in people, not focusing on the negative. It does mean within my life, spending time with people that I love and putting time in for them. So I will be the one to say, should we do something next week? When am I seeing you next? Like, I have to be the one to prompt. If not, I don't get to see those people. And sometimes people do it with me. They are the prompter. Like, luckily, I have a couple of people that do that. Now, the Single Girls Club was always about developing courage, character, and connection, building the community to other people and to yourself. People that have attended the Single Girls Club events have gone away making friends, whether that's at a mixer event, at a getaway, or the new workshops that we're running. And the workshops are special because they bring together the people that want that deep connection. Like, they want to hear the understanding behind why you're the way you are. It's not surface level conversations only just about dating and why it's so frustrating out there, but it's also about the experiences you've had before, the life stages that you're at and moving through. And we ran the first event a couple of weeks ago, the Single on Valentine's Day event, at the wonderful venue of Patch Places in Chelmsford. If you're looking for a co-work space, go check them out. It's beautiful. And we're also going to be bringing another workshop to the forefront in April. So look out for that. But this idea that loneliness comes from your single status is false. You have to be very careful with how you tread. There will be some people that get married and they love it. They're the drug, the people that kept taking the drug, the equivalent of they stayed married. Those that are unhappy in their marriage, while some still stay in their marriage and are unhappy, a number of people, particularly so now that it's more possible to do, will leave that marriage. They will exit that. But overall, from what we look at that research from Bella DiPaolo, is that they were unhappier before they got into the marriage. And the marriage wasn't necessarily the cause. It could have actually been the cause of them becoming unhappier because it exacerbated some of those deep things that they hadn't sorted out yet. But the marriage itself didn't make people happier or less happy over time. And therefore, your relationship status is not going to make you happier or unhappier. And it's not the thing that's going to solve your loneliness. Loneliness is your connections to other people. It's you being connected to yourself and knowing who you truly are and living life that way. And it's about making sure that you live a life not compared to other people all the time. And that's all the stuff that we do in the Single Life Confidence Program. And if you want to find out what area that you need to work on in your single life, then you can head to the link in the description and there'll be a link to a quiz that you can take, which will tell you how you're doing in each of those areas, your character, how well you know yourself, how much you're doing to understand who you are and what you really want. It will look at community, how socialized you are with other people, with how close you are to people in your life and how active you are in spending time with other people. And it will also look at courage, the way that you live out your life. Is it true to yourself? Do you do brave things? Do you push yourself out of your comfort zone? Or do you do stuff on your own? All of those elements are the things that start to create this understanding that it's not your relationship status that causes the loneliness. It's not that element. Sometimes in single life, we can experience loneliness because of the exclusion. So it's not that we're single, but it's that we feel left out. This can happen when someone resumes so much focus on their new boyfriend that you get left behind. Well, that's about you then communicating with your friend and actually saying, hey, I'd really like us to spend more time together. I know you've got somebody else that you're making a lot more time for, but I'd really like us to have some quality time together too. Your friendship is almost the same as a relationship. That's why I use the word relationship all the time. It's not just romantic. Your friendship is a relationship. It's a friendly one. It's a non-sexual one, a non-romantic one. But it is a relationship between two people that requires care, attention, and time. And you need to bring it to your friend's attention if they're that good a friend that you're not spending enough time together. We also might feel excluded when the couples hang out. They don't invite you because they think that you're not going to feel comfortable or that it's not going to suit you or you don't have to pay double for being the only single. And it's the exclusion part. It's not to do with your single status. It's not you being single that makes you feel that way. It's the way people treat you for being single. It's the way they consider you or don't consider you. And again, that requires us to stand up and say, I'd have really appreciated it if you'd invited me to that trip. I'd have loved to have come out for all of you with a meal. Just because I'm single doesn't mean that I can't get on and chat and understand what's going on in your lives. I find it thoroughly entertaining to hear about what your plans are whilst I don't have to worry about children and marriage. You know, make light of it, but bring it to their attention that they're the things you want. And that all falls into the courage element of living out our life true to ourselves and also being bold, not taking any BS for like, oh, I didn't think you'd want to be involved. Please give me a choice. It's my life. Don't make a decision for me. Now, you don't need to be as aggressive as that. But mentally, that's how you want to think. And then you go, right, I'm going to communicate this sensibly and maturely. I'm annoyed that you didn't invite me. But let's see if we can fix this. And the right people will fix it with you. They'll be like, I'm so sorry. I didn't think. I made an assumption and I thought I was doing the best thing. I'm really sorry. What would you want me to do next time? We were talking about another one. Is that something you'd want to come to? Oh, great. You're great at organising as well. Why don't you help do that? Or, oh, you're so good at a social evening. Can you plan us a themed night? Can you get an evening sorted? Whatever it might be. It comes down to all of these different things. Being brave enough to say it, knowing how to communicate, stepping out of our comfort zone and doing it. Single life doesn't have to be lonely unless you let it. If you let the conditions that are there within us and you just let them happen, then that's partially your fault. You have something that you can do about things. You can go out there and make new friends. It's tough, but it is possible to do. It's about knowing how to develop our connections with other people in a deep and authentic way, not just in this surface level way of turning up to a meetup and saying, hey, I'm here, and then expecting everyone to want to be friends with you. That's not how friends are made. It's about deep, genuine connections that are maintained over time and becoming connected to other people in that way whilst becoming connected to yourself, representing the true version of yourself so that you can live out this life in a beautiful way. I would recommend listening to Bella DiPaolo, reading any of her books if you're interested in the research behind it. But her TED Talk, What No One Ever Told You About People Who Are Single, is worth a listen as well. If you want to get that feedback regarding what you can do to improve elements of your single life, then head to the description, take that quiz and get personalised feedback and results about what you can do and where you're at in your single life. Until next time, everybody, we celebrate single life together.